What's going on, guys? Welcome into today's show. I have an amazing interview, especially for all of you entrepreneurs that have an idea, have a business, maybe are working a W-2 job and are really wanting to pursue that entrepreneurial path. You are going to love my guest and their story today. I have Ayat Kintonk, the founder and CEO of Jotform, which is now a multi-hundred-plus-million-dollar company, over 600 employees, offices, and multiple parts all around the globe. And it all started from an idea that Ayat Kin had while working at another company, creating forms for them, that he decided to go and pursue the curation and creation of Jotform, which obviously we all know what that has turned into today. I'm sure you've used their product unknowingly or knowingly. Many of you probably use it inside of your business. And what he has done from an entrepreneurial standpoint and created is nothing short of amazing. And I think you guys are really going to love hearing all of the, you know, highs and lows of his journey as a CEO and a founder, how he decided to approach his startup and bootstrapping it, taking not one investor dollar. And obviously that has paid off in an extremely big way. He was somebody that decided to grow this business slow and steady and strategically. And he really shares his ideology behind that and some of the steps that he took along the way that paid off, that didn't. He talks about how entrepreneurs are very similar to extreme athletes. And ultimately, we dug in on some amazing insights around how they are layering in AI to their business, how he decided to grow the company, when he decided to grow it, what he's doing with his money and his wealth outside of the business. He's a very, very, very big proponent of automating your busy work and how that ultimately can tie into not only your business, but your personal life, sharing automation tools that he likes, all kinds of great insights that I know you guys are going to get massive value when you can tap into the mindset and the brain of a CEO that has achieved the levels that Ayatin has thus far. You know you're going to get some amazing insights. As success always leaves clues. I tried to pull out as many nuggets for you guys as possible, and I think we accomplished that in today's episode. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy today's interview with Ayat Kintonk.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor. Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach can be a slow and brutal process, and in many scenarios, it's just wasting the time of both the buyer and the seller, especially when business owners who are trying to find qualified buyers are using inaccurate and outdated data. But it doesn't have to be this way. With LinkedIn Sales Navigator, your organization can overcome these challenges by leveraging this amazing technology and platform that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights and sales. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to much better outcomes like building a bigger pipeline with real customers, leading to higher win rates and conversions, and of course, larger deals and paydays all around. We call this deep sales, and LinkedIn has built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, our Millionaire Mindcast family has an amazing opportunity to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/mindcast. That's linkedin.com/mindcast for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/mindcast and get started.
Welcome to the show, Ayat Kintonk. How are we doing today?
Hello, Matt. Great to be on your show. I'm doing great.
Well, I am very excited to hear about your journey behind Jotform. It's a tool that we use here in our company that we love. We also share in a very similar passion for, you know, increasing productivity, tapping into peak performance. Automation has become a massive part of our business. It was something that we really focused on heavily at all my hotels. And so I would love to hear more about how your mind and your brain thinks around automation. But for those that don't know who you are and the amazing company that JotForm has turned into today, maybe take us back a little bit and share what your journey has looked like.
Yeah, sure. So I studied computer science in school, but after that, I started working for this media company in New York City. And one of my duties was to create forms. And I worked there for 5 years. Like, we had like over 100 websites, and you know, our editors needed all kinds of forms, like payment forms, contact forms, questionnaire, contest forms, polls, surveys, all kinds of forms. And during this time, I actually didn't like the job much, like that particular task, like creating forms much, because it was just a repetitive work. And I looked for a product that can actually help me just automate that work. And I couldn't find a good option. So that's when I knew that if I start my own business, this could be it, like this could be my product. And 2005, I quit my job and I started working on JotForm. And 2006, February, I released JotForm. That was 18 years ago. And I'm still building forms, so it never stopped.
who would have thought that you know, a job that you didn't like would turn into a multi-million-dollar business and organization and something that you became very passionate about?
Yeah, who would have thought that I would, you know, I would have like over 20 million people actually create forms? I think that's one of the things that's really helpful. If you know a need, like when you're starting your own business, if you actually have the experience of having that need, if you can see that pain, and if you can just see it over and over again, and you understand what's the requirements for that particular product, that's really helpful when you start your business. So it was really helpful for me to actually be working to work with all the editors and to help them with their forms. Then when I started building JotForm, I knew exactly what I needed to build.
Yeah,
that makes sense. It was just much more straightforward after that. But that wasn't, you know, that wasn't enough. Like, I really wanted to make sure that I get a lot of people to start using the product right away. So when I released JotForm, it was completely free. For the first year, from like February 2006 to March 2007, it was completely free. And my goal was to get as many people as possible to use them. And I had this like public support forum where people would post, you know, freely whatever they think. Like, you know, they would, you know, bash my product, or they would like say like, how can it miss something like that? Or some people actually liked it as well. But my answer would be, yeah, it's done. Like, just go there. And I added that option. And that was that like quick that I was responding to people. And that also built the confidence in people that, okay, this product is like someone is actually owning this product. Someone is responsive to our questions or problems. And that's actually how I built that initial user base. Like, it was small in the beginning. A few people every day was joining, and but they saw that, I was like publicly helping everyone individually and making sure they are successful. And that actually helped me build those first users. And that was so valuable because I got so much feedback from those users.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I started working on the paid version, and that's actually when I hired my first employee. So the first year, it was
so only you were working solo, around the clock, no salary, no employees or support, all for one year, and just trying to get as many people into your ecosystem. Now, I wanted to, before we talk about kind of the paid version and scaling the team and the revenue, talk about, because I think it's such a relatable thing for so many people who are working a job. And they're going, I'm not really too passionate about this job. And I wish I could be doing something else. I have an idea. How did you prepare yourself mentally and physically to take that leap of leaving your job You know, how much money did you have saved up? How did you bootstrap getting this business going? I think that's always a big, you know, mental hurdle for people to get over, right? To be able to take that leap of faith. What did that look like for you?
I remember taking the steps, going upstairs to my manager's office. Like, I still remember it. That's like 2005, right?
Poor memory.
But I was like, it was the only place I worked, and I worked there for 5 years, and like, just, I was going to quit. And my reason was, you know, because I was going to like do my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was, I was very scared. Like, I remember feeling like, you know, this is, you know, what am I doing right now? Like, why am I going upstairs? And it's like you look at yourself from a third person. All those kind of moments. And my manager was actually, he was very nice. Like, he was very nice. Like, what are you going to do? Like, he asked me about my plans and things like that. So that actually gave me more comfort. But that, I was actually scared a lot because, you know, I didn't know what was expecting me, what would happen. But at this time, like, I was, I guess I started reading a lot of books about, you know, entrepreneurship. I think that kind of stuff really helped me. And I was also building my other products on the side. Like, I had a few products on the side that I was already selling. And so that also helped me prepare for that moment. Like, so I knew
you already had a little income coming in as well with kind of some side hustles.
That actually like really gave me the confidence because I was actually earning as much as I earned at my full-time job from my side products.
Got it.
So I knew that, you know, I didn't actually need to work. Like, you know, I had infinite runway. Like, I had these products that were selling, but I knew that those products didn't have like scalability. They, like, I couldn't grow their sales much. Mm-hmm. They were much harder. But that's why when I quit my job, I didn't like spend time working on them. I just started working on JotForm right away because I wanted to work on something that could be big.
Yeah.
And so someone who is in my place, like, who's just, you know, starting, I think it's okay to be scared. It's okay to be. I think it's important that you start preparing, you start learning, you start doing something while you still have the job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was reading all the blogs I can find. I was reading all the books I can find. I don't remember if there were podcasts back then, but there was a lot of blogging at that time. Like, you know, there was a blogging culture that people would link to each other. And also I was building on my own products that I learned a lot about, like things like marketing, sales, you know, providing support to customers. How to make a product better by getting the feedback from users. And that actually gave me the confidence to go on my own.
Got it. Now, as you did that first year, you got as many users on board as possible. Then you started to build the team out, right? Because obviously you wanted to really focus on scaling revenue. What did that process look like in your mind? And how did you execute on that plan going forward to kind of hitting that first initial milestone of revenue that you were aiming for?
So in the beginning, I was taking care of everything. So I was actually doing, like, you know, customer support, getting feedback from users. I was building the product. But because I was like divided so much, I decided, okay, I need to hire a developer, a programmer, so that I can actually because kind of developing a product, it requires like constant attention, like being like full time, giving your attention to something, and just like getting divided by, you know, providing support, providing, you know, doing all the other things, wasn't really productive. So the first hire I had was a developer. I started my, you know, first office, very small office, and we would sit together. But that was great because, like, we were always talking about JotForm, how we can make it better. And that's an amazing thing to have a person to talk to. And usually people have co-founders. I actually had a co-founder. Like, we were thinking about, okay, we'll start together. But right like I was, you know, right when we were going to start, his accountant actually told him, okay, you know, 50-50 is not a good idea. You should have like 51-49% split between founders, right? And he was like older, 10 years older than me. He has experience. So he said, I should be the one with the 51%. And that was kind of like a vote of no confidence for me. I felt like, you know, it doesn't feel like, you know, this is going to work out. So, you know, let's go our own ways. We split there. Having my first employee actually, you know, allowed me to have that kind of similar to a co-founder. I was able to, like, you know, talk to someone about the product. And that was really helpful for me. And so, you know, I wasn't focused on revenues. My first goal was to make sure that I could get I could make a good product. Mm-hmm. Product, if it's good, because if the product is not good, even if you give it away as free, that you know, people are not going to take it. So it's, you know, my goal was to make sure that it's a good product. And I always had that mindset, like, make sure that we have a good product, make sure that we are always improving our product all the time. And so that's why I hired the developer. And then I decided that, like, this is going to, we are going to release a paid version on in March 2007. And yeah, when we released that, we had these 500, you know, people actually sign up for JotForm. At the time, it was like $9 a month. Mm-hmm. So, but that actually, building that initial 15,000 users during that first year actually helped me to get people to subscribe to the product. And then that was kind of, that's how things rolled. And I always had this mindset that, you know, I'm not a risk taker. So, you know, I don't like to take big risks. Like, I'm a terrible poker player. You know, I can't bluff. And so I always have this idea that I will only hire the next person if I have the salary for that person for a year in the bank. So that's why it was a very slow growth in the beginning. Like, the first year, I hired my first employee, second year, second employee, third year, third employee, and gradually grown the business. Like, today, we have 600 employees, and we have 7, you know, offices around the world. But it just started very slowly. And the other thing is, we are bootstrapped, right? We never received any investment. We never received any debt or investment.
Talk about that a little bit. Why did you decide not to take VC capital to scale and grow faster?
I think in the beginning, it's just I didn't have the option. Like, I didn't even know, like, where would I find one?
Right? Yeah, right.
I didn't even know, like, how to do it. And also, but as the time, like, as we have grown, actually, you know, investors actually started coming to me and, yep, you know, talking to me. And then when I read about all these stories about, like, the people who took investments, I, you know, discovered that that I actually like freedom. I love having the freedom to make my own decisions. And what happens is that when you take investment, is you kind of have to listen to them.
Yeah. And you have a new boss.
I preferred to have the freedom. Yeah. And because there's also this exit mindset, right? You have to do an exit. Like, you have to have an exit. You know, most of the time you sell your company to another company. Sometimes it's an IPO. I think IPO is, you know, better, because it's still, you know, you still own the company. You now have public shareholders. But when you get this investment, there's this timeline ticking. All right, this timeline is ticking. Like, you have to reach all these numbers. You have to make sure that you reach the next numbers. But I prefer to have this mindset that, like, this is a journey. You know, I'm not after an exit. I focus on having a good product. If I provide good value to people, in return, people are gonna vote with their dollars. And I think the best investment is the customer. When they actually pay you, that's the best kind of investment.
Yeah,
because that's proof that they are getting the value. Yeah.
So have you decided that you have no desire or intention to exit, and that has been kind of the mindset from day one?
Yeah, yeah.
I
think in the first days I didn't have that that clear decision.
Yeah.
I just didn't know what I would do. But after we have grown, that I decided, okay, yeah, we will just go alone and grow our business, grow our product, and make sure that we provide good value to our customers. And the rest will fall off. I think that's a more healthy mindset. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about, because I know a lot of people don't necessarily understand how, tight things are the first few years until you really tip over that critical mass scale of revenue. And obviously, when you're doing everything yourself, and then you're taking every dollar and then you're pouring it back into the company, and now you're pouring it back into hiring people, you're pouring it back into the product, you're pouring it back into your customers. What did those first few years look like for you financially and mentally? How were you navigating, and remaining disciplined to put money back into the company versus a lot of people, right, want to kind of suck money out of the company? What's your outlook and mindset and advice for new founders that are in that early initial stage of growth and reinvestment into the company?
Yeah, I mean, what really helped me was I was single, right? Being single kind of makes it easier to invest in your company as opposed to spend more money for yourself. So that really helped me. Being single, and I really had that mindset that I should be investing in the company as much as possible. And so one example was, I didn't have a car, but my employees had a car at some point. I remember there was this, snowstorm, and, I was walking to the bus stop, and, and my employees actually left with their cars. And I was actually proud of that. I was very proud of that because I was very proud of myself that I had the discipline so that I actually invested in the company, I invested in the business. And that actually, that there's a bright future for us. And that, that's a great feeling. I don't know what it is, but it's a great feeling. And that's financially. Also, I was also doing other things. I had other products. So JotForm was still small, but I still had those other products. I was actually doing some consulting for other clients so that I can actually put as much cash as possible to the business so I can grow the business. But one of the things that's financially, I think the slow growth, just growing slowly, adding more people as I had the funds, so we have been in business 18 years. We never did, we never had a layoff or
amazing
any kind of financial trouble, and that's because because I'm not a risk taker, because I never took those kind of risks. We had this slow growth, and that was the financial part. But for the the productivity or how I spend my time, it wasn't that great. What happened was that I was just doing so much. I was doing the customer support. I was doing everything: accounting, legal, HR, ordering supplies for the office. I was doing I was spending my time on emails, many hours every day. So it was kind of, I was kind of struggling in the first years, just doing too much, working too much. And right at this moment, something else happened. Google actually came out with a competing product. Google released Google Forms. And now, and I was feeling stuck because I was spending so much time with all this busy work. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like I was spending enough time really improving my product, really like putting all my focus on the product, because that's in the long term, that's what's going to win. Because if you have a good product, eventually you're going to win. That's what I believe in. And so I decided, okay, I have to change something. And that's when I decided that the solution was two things, automation and delegation. In the automation end, I tried to automate as much as possible. For example, I was spending like 6 hours a day in my emails. I was able to reduce that to 2 hours by just automating the way I processed my emails. I also started, I went to Odesk, which is Upwork now, and I hired like 5 remote employees to do the support. Because as much as I was learning from our customers, at some point, like spending so many years doing customer support, at some point, there was a threshold that I wasn't learning anymore much. But that was just, I was just not using my time in the right priorities. So I hired the Upwork employees, supporters, and I started automating things. And that actually really made a difference for us. And I believe that that's the reason behind our success, because after I've done that, after I've been able, I found a way to spend more of my time with really improving our service, our product, that our growth actually increased. And that automation mindset that I also applied that to the way we work at company, not just myself, but the way we work at our company. For example, the way we develop our product, we streamlined, we automated many things with that. And I also applied that to our product, right? So our product is a forms product, right? People create forms and then they use these forms to receive submissions. But that's how I was thinking, because that's how I help our editors. I would create a form and give it to them, and you know they would do whatever they want with that and with the data they receive. But as I talk more to our customers, I discovered that forms are just the first step in the journey. And there's actually a workflow that forms are actually triggering. Like someone is registering for something, someone is applying mm-hmm. for something, someone is right. requesting something, right? Someone is contacting or, a sales lead is created. But that's just the first step. And if we can, and we are actually automating that first step for our users. So what if we could actually help people on the rest of their journey? What if we can actually help them with the other things? If they need to create a document, what if we can automate the document creation? What if we can help them get a document signed after a form is filled? What if we can help them with approvals? What if we could help them process the data they receive? So we started building all these other products that actually work together with our forms product, and that really made the difference because. People were able to use our product more and more, and that actually, reduced our churn, increased our retention, and we were able to grow much faster when we did that. And we were able to do that because we focused on helping people automate their work with JotForm.
Yeah.
So after I learned automating things myself, and after I taught our company how to automate things, and after I helped. Our customers automate things, then I decided to write the book. So last year I released the book, Automate Your Busy Work. And it became a Wall Street Journal bestseller. And it's been great to also have this book so that I can also help other people with automation.
So let's talk a little bit about, some of the nuggets that are in the book. And obviously we'll link up on millionairemindcast.com on your episode for people to go and find that. But in terms of automation, most people, you know, don't know where to start, right? And, you know, how would one audit some of the things in their life or in their business that are actually busy work for them that could be automated? Where do they start in that process?
Yeah, great question. So in the book, I talk about the automation mindset, and there are four principles in the automation mindset. The first one is clarify your priorities. And as you said, like, you want to audit how you spend your time, how you spend your time, how much busy work you have. And one of the ways you can do it is you could do a time audit. So basically, you create a spreadsheet, you put down like how every hour, maybe you can set an alarm. Every hour, you write down exactly what you did during that hour. And if you do this for a week, and if you add them up, that you're going to actually find out how you spend your time during that week. And once you have those totals, I want you to ask two questions. What should I spend my time on, and what shouldn't I spend my time on? And where would you put those answers? Which, like, in which category would you put those answers? Right, that's the question. And if you're actually spending a lot of time on things that you shouldn't be spending your time on, things that are not really making you, you know, feel good about yourself, the busy work, that the repetitive work, I think those are the things that you should automate. Because the goal of automation is not to spend like 4 hours, work 4 hours a week, or, you know, go to a beach and just not work. But your goal is to actually spend your time wisely, spend your time on things that really matter, prioritize your time. And to be able to accomplish that, you need to figure out that what do you care about most? Like, what do you want to spend your time on? Like, if you have a business, you know, growing your business, if you have a product or service, improving your product or service could be one thing that you really care about. And the time you spend on things like, you know, doing support or like just processing your emails could be the wrong way to use your time. So clarify your priorities is the first one. The second one is embrace laziness and impatience. Bill Gates has a great quote. He says that, I would always hire a lazy person to do a hard job because he will find an easy way to do it. So if you kind of need this lazy mindset, this impatience, so that, like, you should say enough is enough. Okay, I'm going to stop wasting my time. I'm going to find a product. I'm going to find a tool that can actually take away from me. I'm going to find a way to delegate this work. I'm going to find a way to give this work to some automation product so that I can actually spend my time on important things. And the third principle is you need to make time to save time. A day of automation can save you a year of work if you spend the time to research what's available. So as I mentioned, like, I was spending like 6 hours a day processing my emails. The problem was I was receiving hundreds of emails every day, and because they weren't organized, I was actually getting lost. I was constantly stressed. What if I missed an important email? And I was constantly checking the email and trying to find important email. And I was sometimes forgetting an important email. So the first thing I tried was Inbox Zero. It didn't really work out because now that I was just spending so much time clearing my inbox, that didn't really help me. But so I decided I'm going to search for a product that can help me. So I probably tried like 10 different email products. And they were seeing, like, you know, they use AI and they have all these features, but none of them actually worked for me. But while I was like trying these products, I actually discovered something that I discovered exactly what I needed. What I needed was I needed an email product that actually worked in a different way. I need an email product that actually sorted emails by priority. So the email products actually sort the emails by date. You can change the order. You can put the recent to the top or to the bottom, but they only work by like the date and time, right? But what if there was a product that actually showed me the most important emails for me at the top and the second most important in the second place, and the spam or that email that I don't care about is at the bottom of my inbox? If I had that, I knew that I wouldn't be wasting my time. Right away, like as soon as I launched my emails, I would find the email I need. So I actually, looked for a product like that as well, but I couldn't find one. But then I decided that I'm using Gmail. I could actually do this with Gmail. I first thought that I could just write an app script, like just code something like this. But then I looked at the Gmail filters and I discovered that this is very simple and anybody can do this. It's like, it doesn't require programming. It's just, very simple. So what I did was I created these levels, level one, level two, level three. And level one is like the top priority email for me. For example, if our head of HR emails me, that's a very important email probably. So it should go to level one. My publisher is Wiley. If they email me, that should go to my level one. So between meetings, if I have like 10 minutes, I can just process my level one emails. Just make sure that I take care of them. And then, I don't have to feel stressed about it. And the level two is like the second level, usually like direct emails to me. And level three is the emails that are like more like I'm in the thread or newsletter, things like that. And all the other actually drop to the default inbox. So I would process my level one, then level two and level three. And this just saved me so much time because the great thing about this is that, as I created all these filters, and actually I have like thousands of filters today, but I didn't create them at once. Like it took me years to build them. I can find the most important emails. The other thing is like all the other emails, it's just very easy for me to process because like I see 100 emails at once, just select them all. And just quickly scroll down, make sure that I don't miss anything like without the filter. And then I just archive them all. So it's like all the important emails go to levels and the other emails are easy to process. So I don't have to sort those emails. It's basically permission-based system that works for me. Yeah,
I love it. And number four was?
And the number four is the system thinking. And I think that's the most important one. So embrace systems thinking. And so you want to think about automations, not just like separate things. Like automations are usually part of the workflow. You're not just, because the real work is not like this simple. You cannot just automate easily. Like you have to send an email to someone, for example. Yeah. You have to wait for something. Like you have all these different steps and you have all these complicated workflows that branch out, things like that, right? So, but you have to start slowly. You have to divide and conquer your workflows and automate things individually, slowly. But your goal is to build these systems from these automations. And once you start building these systems, so you basically go from doing these things yourself to being a manager to these systems.
Yeah.
So you start like refining and iterating your systems. You start like checking how your system is performing. So instead of like, you don't want to micromanage your system. You want to check those systems. You want to make sure everything is working fine. But what you want to do is you want to gradually automate as much as possible. And you want to be the manager of your system. And that's the ultimate productivity.
Yeah.
Instead of doing things yourself, you're actually building your systems. And this is a great age to be to do that because just there are like so many tools, so many tools. And now the AI is coming really fast. with all these additional automations that can do, that I'm really excited about the times we live in.
Are you interested in boosting your income by an extra $50,000 this year? If so, you're going to love what I've got in store for you. I am beyond excited to officially announce an incredible opportunity to join me in my exclusive mastermind, which will include myself and 25 other hand-selected investors who are actively pursuing commercial real estate in 2024 and want to be held accountable to making sure they buy their first or their next commercial real estate investment property that will net them a minimum of $50,000 a year. This mastermind group will not only teach you how to do that, how to find, how to analyze, how to structure and buy these types of commercial real estate investment properties, but you'll also have an opportunity to be a part of an intimate group of high achievers that are going to take your network and your resources to a whole nother level. But here's the catch. Like I mentioned before, this is exclusive. We're only selecting 25 ambitious individuals for our founding members group who are serious and ready to take that next step in their commercial real estate investing journey. So if you are ready to increase your passive income by at least $50,000 in the next year with commercial real estate investing, then this is your moment. These spaces are gonna fill up fast. And trust me, this is the one and only time to be a founding member, which comes with some pretty special benefits. So head over to myfirst50k.com and submit your application now. Again, that's myfirst50k.com. You can head over there, check out the program, see everything that it entails, submit your application to join, and I can't wait to connect with you soon.
Talk a little bit about that. What are you excited about in terms of AI, and how is someone with your experience and expertise thinking about folding AI into whether it's your business or your personal life? How are you utilizing AI to its highest potential?
Yeah. But before I get to that, I think there are three revolutions going on. So the first revolution was the software eating the world. Mark Andreessen, basically everything is becoming software. Mm-hmm. Everything is turning into software. You know, you would go to a travel agent, travel advisor, you go to websites and accomplish everything. So that's the first revolution. The second one is the no-code revolution, which means that everyone is becoming programmers. Everyone is becoming creators of programs. Everyone is building their own solutions. And we actually have that mindset at JustForm. We want to make sure that people can actually build their own solutions, that we have so much customization. We have so many building blocks so people can actually create solutions and they can use it on their own ways. So the second one is no-code. And the third one is the AI revolution. What AI revolution does is actually, multiplies these two things 100 times, because now when you turn something into software, it's still those things are still very logical. It's but when you have AI, it's like you have a workforce that can accomplish things for you. Mm-hmm. And with no code, even with no code, for example, at JustForm, we have this conditional logic feature where you can actually set conditions so that if someone does this, then do this. If someone answers this question this way, send this email, things right. like that.
Yep.
But with the AI, it's you don't even have to understand those logics. You don't even have to build those code. You can actually tell the AI, okay, if someone selects this property from the dropdown, just send them this email. Just send this email to me, right? It's just you can just tell it to the AI. So it's actually multiplies that power. That power of the no-code product. Yeah. And as a person who is actually working on a no-code product, this excites me so much.
Okay.
And for me personally, I use ChatGPT a lot to, instead of going to Google, just go ask ChatGPT. Yeah. That's
I use Google probably 80% less nowadays, and I use ChatGPT almost for everything.
Exactly. I it's a great friend to brainstorm together with, right?
It's beautiful. You can ask. Yeah, it learns your personality, your questions. Yeah. I mean, the sequencing, it's it just gets better and better. And I always tell people, just treat it like the smartest personal assistant you've ever had. Tell it what to do, ask it questions, continue to get feedback. And so it sounds like it's a tool that you like to use in work and personal life quite frequently.
Yeah. But I think the real power of AI is it's gonna actually democratize everything for everyone, because like we have spent so much time, like we rewrote JustForm 4 times to make sure that we have an easy to use product. But even today, like we can see that some people, it's hard to figure out because they are busy, maybe it's just they don't have the time. It's just so hard to it's not very easy for everyone to figure out all these different kinds of products. And but with the AI, it's kind of like you just tell whatever you need, and people can tell whatever they need, and all these products can actually just come in and say, okay, I can accomplish that task. And if you think about that, now like all these, like there are like thousands of tens of thousands of products that, if you think about that, you don't have to learn now. Like you can just tell AI, I'm gonna do this, and if it can connect with those products, and if it can do those tasks for you, it's just there's just like so many things you can accomplish. You can become like so much productive, and basically it's like you are, again, you are becoming the manager. You are actually managing. You are the person who is actually designing what needs to be done, but you don't have to do the work. And that's the great thing about that. The AI is just going there.
I was going to say, I mean, that in itself is going to lower the barrier of entry for people who have great ideas but don't understand how to build, what their vision is. When you've got, technology and tools that are available today and rapidly, exponentially, coming on the scene every single day, it's going to continue to create so many cool opportunities. What are you most excited about in terms of AI and how you're bringing it into your world?
So at this point, like we are still working on how we are using. So it's kind of like a secret, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
Within JustForm, right? So we are basically, the way we develop things is we release it to a very small number of users. And we are actually doing some really cool AI stuff, but only a very small number of people are seeing them.
Yeah.
But once we actually become successful, once we actually develop it into like something really, really good that works, then we actually announce it and we release it. So that's why I can probably not talk about them much. We actually, one of the things in our business, one of the problems with our business is like all these like phishing spam. People actually do a lot of phishing with forms. It's really hard to like prevent them.
Yeah.
And we've been like, trying to find solutions for them for a long time. But the AI actually, with a little bit of training from humans, was able to accomplish so much more than like we do. So that problem, like the spam and phishing and fraud problem, is kind of like, we were able to reduce that greatly. And that's great for our business because that creates so much risk for us to allow people to do like illegal things with JustForm. So that really helped us in the back end of JustForm. On the front end, those things are still under development. So, I can't talk too much about them.
Yeah, no, understood. I want to shift a little bit over to your personal life. You've built such an amazing company and business. What has your personal life looked like over the course of this journey, and how have you managed to be all in and focused on your business, 600 employees, the levels of revenue that you guys have hit, and still keep some level of, balance inside of your personal life?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I now have 3 kids, 9, 7, and 1.
Nice.
So I'm quite busy.
Yes.
So I always had this mindset that I shouldn't be like micromanaging everything in the business. I think it was around like we had like 15 employees that I discovered that things were not working well. Like when we were like small, like when we were like, you know, 5 employees, we were actually working so much better. When we became this 15 employee company, things started breaking down. Like we weren't doing as good job as we did before.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked myself, what's wrong with this? And when I compared to the early days, what was different was in the early days, that small team, like 5-person team, was actually working together as a team and working on a single project together, constantly discussing what they were doing, constantly coming up with ideas. So that really worked. But when we actually became a 15-person company, everybody was doing like a different thing. And what happens was people weren't talking to each other and they weren't comparing ideas. They're like, we weren't working as a team. So that's when I decided, okay, this is not working. We are going to actually have, instead of having like 15 people working on different things, we are going to have these 3 teams that like these small teams that work on a single project. And just, you know, this also makes sure that I prioritize things as well. But that approach, having these teams, having these teams of teams, having a company of teams, is great because all these small teams, they usually have their own office space, they have their own whiteboard, and they sit together and they work on a single project.
Yeah.
That's the way we work. And that just made a huge difference because they are working, like they have the freedom to come up with solutions and execute those solutions. They are cross-functional teams. So because of that, there's also less work for me. Like I just have to decide what are the top most important problems in our business, in our product, in our service. Like if I can just decide on those top problems, and if I can just make sure that our teams are focused and dedicated to those problems, and that they actually solve them, because once they put their focus on those problems. So what happened was that when I did this, I was able to like became more independent, more free to actually spend more time with my family, right?
That's great.
I think before we had the kids, like 2012, like me and my wife, just we traveled Europe for 3 months. That was amazing.
Nice.
And hopefully, like when the kids grow, we will probably do that again.
Yeah.
Just drove all Europe, like 25 countries all summer. That we really enjoyed that. And during that time, I would just look at my emails, half an hour every day, and that was enough for me.
Yeah.
And today I try to spend as much time as possible with the kids, have long vacations with them, and so it's
that's great.
Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes is there's two types of businessmen. There's businessmen with families, and there's family men with businesses. And, obviously I think we know people that, say that they're doing this for their family and their family is their why, but ultimately they don't spend any time with their wife or their kids. And that ends up being, a regret that many people have. They end up having maybe tens or, hundreds of millions of dollars more, but they don't have a family to share it with. And then there are the people that build, that as a priority into their life and their business, and they still find a way to, build something magnificent and amazing in the business world, but not at the sacrifice of, their kids and their families. So I love that. That's a priority for you. In terms of, how big JotForm has become and how financially abundant it has become, what have you started to do, if at all, outside of the business with the income and the wealth that you've generated? Is it all staying in JotForm, or have you started to look at diversifying outside of JotForm and building wealth outside of your core tree trunk of JotForm being the massive wealth pillar that it's become?
Yeah, I've been reinvesting in JotForm all the time, but I also have my kind of hobby. Maybe it's not hobby. Basically, I'm from Turkey, And actually, I've been buying olive groves.
Okay.
And that's where I invest. So it's, I also like it in a way that, like, we are in the technology business. We are always about technology, but then olive trees are the opposite of technology.
Earth I like and simplicity.
Olive trees. And there are, you know, full-time employees who work the farm, and I go there as much as possible. And
beautiful.
Just, I'm investing in a completely different kind of area, and I enjoy it. I enjoy spending time in the olive groves, and I also, you know, created some like fruit, you know, groves and you know, wines, and yeah,
that's great. Great.
Yeah,
I love that. So obviously, business being your core kind of cash flow flywheel, you know, wealth building pillar, but obviously, it's created, you know, some disposable income to invest in other asset classes like real estate and dirt. Now, if we were to wrap up and, you know, give people one golden nugget around automation, productivity, you know, whatever it might be out of the book that you feel is something that people have to you know, get and apply into their life that would make a massive difference, what would that be?
Oh, I would say, you know, spend time, you know, learning about systems thinking. There's a great book by Daniela Meadows, and she talks about the systems thinking and how to understand the systems and how to use systems to make a change in the world or in your business. So, yeah, definitely just, you know, learn more about systems thinking.
Well, Aitken Tonk, it has been a pleasure getting to spend some time with you today. Such an awesome story, awesome journey. I love the way your mind thinks. I love the way you're working towards the future and also just living so presently with your family, your kids, your business. And I know a lot of people are going to want to follow your journey. They're going to want to check out JotForm. What's the best place for them to connect more with you?
So I have a website, myfirstnamelastname.com, aitkentonk.com. And in my website, you can contact me. There's also a free chapter of my book. You can read the first chapter there. And if you like it, you know, you can get it on Amazon. And yeah, so feel free to contact me. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be sure to link up all of the website, the book, everything on Aitken's show notes on millionairemindcast.com. So be sure to check that out. And again, Aitken Tonk, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Matt, for having me on the show.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview. And if you did, all I ask is that you take 2 minutes and leave a review in iTunes, where by doing so, you're also going to get entered in to win a $100 gift card. Don't forget to share this episode out with somebody else that may need to hear it or may get some value from what was talked about in today's interview. And for those of you who are really looking to accelerate your wealth building journey, you want to unlock more financial freedom, you want to get more time back, or maybe you just want to level up your life, your business, your finances, be sure to head over to millionairemindcast.com and check out all the amazing products and resources that we have for our Millionaire Mindcast family, whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, mastermind events, downloads and checklists, the Rich Life Planner for those of you looking to take your goal setting and productivity to the next level. We've got all kinds of great, valuable tools. So be sure to check those out at millionairemindcast.com. And last but not least, if you're not on my weekly text letter and you want to be the first to know of exclusive updates and offers, in addition to behind the scenes access to a lot of the stuff that I'm doing, that I'm investing in, be sure to join by texting the word notes to 844-447-1555. With that being said, thanks for listening today. Until next time, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friends.